Welcome back to another episode of Sleep Whispers. I'm Harris, and this is a podcast of whispered ramblings and whispered readings to help you to relax and fall asleep. This is episode number 35, and the whisper menu for tonight includes a curious quote about contributing or being a contributor rather than just being an observer, and I'll share one story about myself about that. And then for the meta chat, I'll share an update about the Whispergrams, and I have some exciting news about the podcast being in the top 100 health podcasts, which, I mean, I guess that is pretty much the news. I won't have much more else to say about it than that, but I'm sure I'll ramble a little bit about it, and I'll share stats from the podcast survey, and I'll also have some feedback from Enzimin, and I'll finish with a fade out, which will be a reading of the story of the three calendars, which is not a very interesting title, but it's a fable, so it's more interesting than the way it sounds. If you are a new listener, then welcome, welcome, welcome to my little world of whispers. My email is sleepwhispers@gmail.com, and my website is sleepwhispers.com. And if you poke around on the website, you'll find links if you want to write a review, take the podcast survey, or write a Whispergram. And there's links in the show notes of each episode also. Whispered ramblings and whispered readings. Tonight's curious quote is from Chuck Palahniuk, and here's what it is: to merely observe your culture without contributing to it seems very close to existing as a ghost. I like this quote. Well, I don't know why I said it's dumb. Of course I like it, because it's in my quote book and I bring it on the podcast. I guess sometimes, though, I critique the quotes. Sometimes I do have issues with the quotes. Alright, anyway. So this quote mentions that you can kind of be like a ghost if you just observe rather than contribute. And for me, for much of my youth, I did exist as a ghost, because I was very shy, reserved, and quiet, I guess, as a child. And as a adolescent, up until I started college, and I remember the feeling of, like, the more people that were near me or around me, then I was more likely to be shy and to be quiet and to observe situations rather than participate. And I think it was and is, because I still feel this way a lot of times, but it's driven by my fear of failure, fear of criticism, and I guess fear of ridicule would be a good strong term to put it in. In college, I wrote an essay for a class. I don't know if it was, doesn't matter. I just caught myself getting rambling. I wrote an essay about being a shy person and I didn't describe myself as a ghost, but instead as an egg, which was a better metaphor to me, or was a good metaphor to me, because a ghost is, it's an end stage, it's a dead thing. And I didn't feel that way. I felt the opposite. I felt like an egg wanting to hatch, but waiting a really long time to do that. And it did happen. I did finally come out of my shell, like, consciously. Like, just deciding it was time. And it was in my senior year of high school. You know, just about the time I was heading off to college. And from then on, I would push myself to be more comfortable in large crowds and to be more open, I guess, with strangers, to be more engaging. as afraid. And I guess ultimately it was about being more open to failure and criticism. And there are many examples and stories I could share, but I'll just pick one right now because I think it is a good example of this for me. It was 1999, and there was another Woodstock Music Festival being organized. So it was called Woodstock 99. The very first Woodstock was in 1969, and I wasn't even born yet when the first Woodstock happened. So this, in a way, was my first opportunity to, you know, attend a big Woodstock music festival. So I decided to go, and I was also going by myself. So this was part of this, you know, push myself to, you know, be in large crowds and to just do it by myself. And I was very excited, actually, about it. I mean, fearful, but excited. And I started to visualize how fun it was going to be. I had already been to other, you know, big music festivals, and I knew that there were always some strange and quirky people at these events who actually added to the fun, because they would, like, dress up in some festive, crazy, or outrageous way. And I remember the moment that I decided I was going to go to Woodstock 99, and I was going to be one of those crazy, festive, quirky people dressed up in some way. I was not going to go to this event to just observe and somewhat participate by being there. But I was going to contribute in some way to the event. I was going to make the festival just a little bit more fun for others. Alright, so here's what I did. I borrowed a Santa Claus suit, and then I bought a bunch of candy, like bags and bags of candy, and I put the candy in a pillowcase. And sure enough, I followed through with my plan, and for several hours on each of the days of the event, because I think it was like a 3-day event, I walked around and I gave out candy dressed as Santa Claus. It made people so happy. They ran up to me, thanked me for the candy, and so many just wanted to have their picture taken with me as Santa Claus. There was a moment when two guys with a camcorder wanted to interview me, and so I said sure. And just so many moments of people smiling at me, waving at me, or hugging me. And I could just see that I had added to the event, that I had made it more fun and memorable for a lot of people. Now, I'm sure there were people there that also mocked me or laughed at me, you know, in some negative way. And if that did happen, and if I was aware of it at the time, I don't have any memories of it. All my memories are of the happy and appreciative people. So after several days, I felt I had accomplished my goal. So to reference and paraphrase, I guess, the quote, I was not just observing my culture, but I was contributing to it. I was not a ghost. All right, here's really what I think is the most, to me, the most interesting part of this. So, or the funniest, I don't know. So about a month later, something funny happened. I was visiting my nieces and nephews who lived on the other side of the state. And at one point during my visit, one looked at me sheepishly. I could tell there was some strange question coming. And they asked me, "Did you go to Woodstock?" And of course they were referring to the Woodstock 99, not the one in 69. And so I said, yes. And then they followed up with another question. Were you dressed as Santa Claus? And I paused. But then I said, yes. And one of them started jumping up and down saying, like, "I told you so, I told you so." And I just looked at them and I said, "How did you know?" Because I hadn't really told anyone that I had done that. That was just my little thing I had done on the side. Not like on the side, but I just did it for me. I didn't tell anyone. I went and put on a Santa Claus outfit and walked around. So I asked them, "How did you know?" And they said they saw me interviewed on the news. And some of them thought it looked like me. Those two guys with that camcorder, I did not realize that that was like a news agency. They just seemed like college guys with a handheld camcorder. So, I don't know, maybe I was just naive at the time, just not aware, but, or maybe they you know, sold the footage or gave the footage to a news agency. And I just remember thinking, or not thinking, that these guys had anything to do with a news agency. Anyway, as soon as my nieces and nephews found out that, sure enough, that was me on the news, dressed as Santa Claus, and I was being interviewed on this news story about Woodstock, their eyes just lit up, and they just looked so proud that I was their uncle. It's like I was the, you know, crazy but cool uncle. And that was an unusual moment for me for most of my life before that, being younger, because I was the person that was just quiet, you know, and not standing out in any way. But it was just one of several moments which confirmed I definitely wasn't a quiet egg anymore. And it's been moments like that which have given me the courage to try other new things, some silly, some meaningful. But the important thing is, moments like that have helped me to not fear failure as much, to be more open and accepting of criticism, and to take risks when others are watching. I guess in the end, I have realized that small and large contributions have small and large risks, but they also have small and large rewards. Alright, I think that's all I have to say about that. Alright, now for the meta chat. I'll be chatting about an update about the Whispergram, some podcast news, some stats from the podcast survey, and feedback from Enzyman. So starting off with the Whispergram update, I have not received any new Whispergrams yet. So I think that means I probably won't be getting enough in the near future to compile them all together as their own episode, because I don't want to put out like these individual episodes if they're just like one Whispergram. So I had created this my contingency plan I mentioned in the last episode. So my my plan B was that if they just roll in kind of slowly and occasionally, then I'll just add them to the full show episodes. But if they come in a burst and there's a bunch of them, then I will compile them together into a Whispergram only bonus episode. And I updated the Whispergram form to clarify that, because I don't want to confuse anyone, because the form used to say they'd be in their own episodes. So now I just updated it to say that they'll be just in the podcast. Alright, next up is my exciting news. And I really don't even know how this happened, but Sleep Whispers was in the top 100 health podcasts in iTunes. I just happened to be scrolling through the top 100 health podcasts. Scrolling. Okay, that looks interesting. That looks interesting. Oh, I like that cover art. Oh, wow. And then, Shazam. There's Sleep Whispers at number 84, which was amazing. Now, I've confirmed that this is a strange thing, because it wasn't there the next day, and it's not there now. Like, it just jumped into the top 100, and then disappeared off the top 100. And you can bet that I took a screenshot. And I have posted this screenshot if you want to see it for yourself. I mean, it's not much. I don't know, it's probably not that interesting to look at, but the screenshot is on the website now, and I just added it to the photos page. The new podcast survey is now up to 17 total responses. And in the last survey update, I shared stats for the survey question of how many episodes have you listened to so far. And now, in this episode, I say gonna a lot. I think my mouth gets lazy. I'm going to. Now I just sound like a dork. Now I don't know what to say. So anyway, now I'm going to share stats for the survey question. How do you usually listen to the podcast? And so far, 71% of all survey responders selected headphones. 29% selected that they use the built-in speakers of their mobile device, and nobody selected the option of listening through speakers that are connected either by wires or by Bluetooth to a mobile device or to a computer. So I've used all three of these these different methods. And the funny thing to me is that the method I've been using for the past few weeks is actually the method that no one has selected. So I've been using a Bluetooth speaker. I have a window ledge that's kind of next to my head when I sleep. So I just put the Bluetooth speaker on the window ledge and let the sound come out of my cell phone to the Bluetooth speaker. So there's upsides and downsides to that. I definitely, in a way, like headphones the best for the sound quality. So I may go back to that. I just like to try different ways to listen as I fall asleep. The newest survey response has been from Enzimin, so I'll share some of her comments. Here are her comments or feedback about the podcast. Your voice is so soothing. I love the occasional mouth sounds and your gentle laugh when you find something funny. I have repeated your curious quotes to other people, and they think I'm clever. So thanks for those. Ensman also shared a couple of relaxation tips, which you might find helpful. Here's what she shared. Listening to Reiki mantras. Even though I know nothing about them. And rubbing silky labels on clothes. The ones with the washing instructions. Enzimin, thank you for filling out the podcast survey. And it's wonderful to hear how much you are enjoying the podcast. Thank you. I had to reread your second relaxation tip several times to understand what you were saying. You said, rubbing silky labels on clothes, the one with the washing instructions. And then I realized what you were saying, and you described it exactly correct. So I went into my closet and I checked some of my clothing labels, and you are so right there. They are so silky soft. And yeah, I wonder if they are actually silk. Like, I wonder what they're made out of. And while I was standing in my closet, rubbing these soft, silky labels, I had a vision that I don't have any, but that there's small stuffed animals that tend to be made out of something similar. Like where the outside is this, it's either silk or maybe sateen. And I've always liked touching those. It's like a large silky clothing label. Oh, and I thought of another thing that reminded me of it, which is wide ribbons that are used for wrapping presents. So can you visualize, you know, when you either make a bow on a present or you just wrap that wide ribbon around it, like those feel a lot like clothing labels. And I like touching those also. So I get what you're saying. So thank you again for completing the podcast survey and sharing those tips. If anyone else is interested in completing the survey, there is a link in the show notes of this episode and also on the website. Alright, now it is time for the tuck-in and the fade-out. For tonight's fade-out, I'm going to be reading the story of the three calendars. So I looked through Enzimin's survey form. That's the survey whose comments I read in this episode. So I looked at her survey form to see what her favorite fade-out type was. Because there's a special place in the survey you can just type what your single favorite is. And she did not specify a specific type. I think that's redundant. Specify a specific type. How about she did not specify a type? Yeah. My editor, I can hear my editor chattering at me. Sounding alarms. So, what she wrote was kind of funny. So instead of writing what her favorite type was, she just wrote, "I'm so sorry. I rarely make it to the fade out before I fall asleep." So what I did look at was to see how she rated the different types of fade outs. And she gave the highest rating to the reading a story or fable. And this fade-out type also gets lots of high ratings, or has lots of high ratings, from others who have filled out the form. So I thought, okay, I'll do another reading of a fable. So this one is titled The Story of the Three Calendars. And calendars in this fable does not refer to a systematic organization of days and months and timescales. I don't know exactly what a calendar is in this story, and I actually haven't fully read the story. I just picked it out, but I did scroll through it to see if I could find something about what they were referring to by a calendar. And I found the first description, I think, in the story of what they are referring to by a calendar. Anyway, here's the quote story. Three calendars, all blind in the right eye, and all with their heads, faces, and eyebrows clean shaved. So my only point of sharing that is I don't want you to think that this is a story about a wall calendar that, and I really don't know what to tell you what it is about, except for there's going to be some interesting half-blind head-shaved characters in it. Alright, now it's time for the tuck-in, and then I'll immediately go into reading the story for the fade out. Go ahead and turn your lights off if there's any lights on in your room. Go ahead and turn the screen off of your mobile device and put that aside. Adjust your pillows just the way you like them. Adjust your bedding and covers just the way you like them. Find a comfortable position. You can lie on your side, or try lying on your back. Or maybe lying on your front. Go ahead and select the most comfortable position for you. Now relax the muscles in your legs. Relax the muscles in your arms. Relax your shoulders. Allow your entire body to melt into your bed. Focus your mind on one good thing from today. It may be something good that happened to you. Or something good someone did for you. Or maybe something good you did for someone else. This will be the happy thought you will focus on if you find your mind wandering during the fade out. Finally, allow your entire body to fully relax. Focus your mind on that one happy thought. And breathe in and out slowly at a pace that feels relaxing and comfortable for you. The story of the three calendars. In the reign of the Caliph Harun al-Rashid, there lived at Baghdad a porter who, in spite of his humble calling, was an intelligent and sensible man. One morning, he was sitting in his usual place with his basket before him, waiting to be hired, when a tall young lady, covered with a long veil, came up to him and said, "Pick up your basket and follow me." The porter, who was greatly pleased by her appearance and voice, jumped up at once, poised his basket on his head, and accompanied the lady, saying to himself as he went, "Oh, happy day! Oh, lucky meeting!" The lady soon stopped before a closed door, at which she knocked. It was opened by an old man with a long white beard, to whom the lady held out money without speaking. The old man, who seemed to understand what she wanted, vanished into the house and returned, bringing a large jar of wine, which the porter placed in his basket. Then the lady signed to him to follow, and they went their way. The next place she stopped at was a fruit and flower shop, and here she bought a large quantity of apples, apricots, peaches, and other things, with lilies, jasmine, and all sorts of sweet-smelling plants. From this shop, she went to a butcher's, a grocer's, and a poulterer's, till at last the porter exclaimed in despair, "My good lady, if you'd only told me you were going to buy enough provisions to stock a town, I would have brought a horse, or rather, a camel." The lady laughed and told him she had not finished yet, but after choosing various kinds of scents and spices from a druggist's store, she halted before a magnificent palace, at the door of which she knocked gently. The porteress who opened it was of such beauty that the eyes of the man were quite dazzled. and he was the more astonished as he saw clearly that she was no slave. The lady who had led him hither stood watching him with amusement till the porteress exclaimed, "Why don't you come in, my sister? This poor man is so heavily weighed down that he is ready to drop." When they were both inside, the door was fastened, and they all three entered a large court, surrounded by an openwork gallery. At one end of the court was a platform, and on the platform stood an amber throne supported by four ebony columns garnished with pearls and diamonds. In the middle of the court stood a marble basin filled with water from the mouth of a golden lion. The porter looked about him, noticing and admiring everything, but his attention was specially attracted by a third lady sitting on the throne, who was even more beautiful than the other two. By the respect shown to her by the others, he judged that she must be the eldest, and in this he was right. This lady's name was Zobeida, the porteress was Sadie, and the housekeeper was Amina. At a word from Zobeida, Sadie and Amina took the basket from the porter, who was glad enough to be relieved from its weight, and when it was emptied, paid him handsomely for its use. But instead of taking up his basket and going away, the man still lingered till Zobeida inquired what he was waiting for, and if he expected more money. "Oh, madam," returned he, "you have already given me too much, and I fear I may have been guilty of rudeness in not taking my departure at once. But, if you will pardon my saying so, I was lost in astonishment at seeing such beautiful ladies. A company of women without men is, however, as dull as a company of men without women." And after telling some stories to prove his point, he ended by entreating them to let him stay and make him a fourth at their dinner. The ladies were rather amused at the man's assurances, and after some discussion, it was agreed that he should be allowed to stay, as his society might prove entertaining. "But listen, friend," said Zobeida, "if we grant your request, it is only on condition that you behave with the utmost politeness, and that you keep the secret of our way of living, which chance has revealed to you." Then they all sat down to the table, which had been covered by Amina with the dishes she had bought. After the first few mouthfuls, Amina poured some wine into a golden cup. She first drank herself, according to the Arab custom, and then filled it for her sisters. When it came to the porter's turn, he kissed Amina's hand and sang a song, which he composed at the moment in praise of the wine. The three ladies were pleased with the song and then sang themselves. So the repast was a merry one and lasted much longer than usual. At length, seeing that the sun was about to set, Sadie said to the porter, "Rise and go. It is now time for us to separate." "Oh, madam," replied he, "how can you desire me to quit you in the state in which I am, between the wine I have drunk and the pleasure of seeing you? I should never find the way to my house. Let me remain here till morning, and when I have recovered my senses, I will go when you like." "Let him stay," said Amina, who had before proved herself his friend. "It is only just, as he has given us so much amusement. If you wish it, my sister," replied Zobeida. "But if he does, I must make a new condition." "Porter," she continued, turning to him, "if you remain, you must promise to ask no questions about anything you may see. If you do, you may perhaps hear what you don't like." This being settled, Amina brought in supper and lit up the hall with a number of sweet-smelling tapers. They then sat down again at the table and began with fresh appetites to eat, drink, sing, and recite verses. In fact, they were all enjoying themselves mightily when they heard a knock at the outer door, which Sadie rose to open. She soon returned, saying that three calenders, all blind in the right eye, and all with their heads, faces, and eyebrows clean shaved, begged for admittance, as they were newly arrived in Baghdad, and night had already fallen. "They seem to have pleasant manners," she added, "but you have no idea how funny they look. I am sure we should find their company diverting." Zobeida and Amina made some difficulty about admitting the newcomers, and Sadie knew the reason of their hesitation, but she urged the matter so strongly that Zobeida was at last forced to consent. "Bring them in then," said she, "but make them understand that they are not to make remarks about what does not concern them, and be sure to make them read the inscription over the door. For on the door was written in letters of gold, "Whoso meddles in affairs that are no business of his will hear truths that will not please him." The three calendars bowed low on entering and thanked the ladies for their kindness and hospitality. The ladies replied with words of welcome, and they were all about to seat themselves when the eyes of the calendars fell on the porter, whose dress was not so very unlike their own, though he still wore all the hair that nature had given him. "This," said one of them, "is apparently one of our Arab brothers who has rebelled against our ruler." The porter, although half asleep from the wine he had drunk, heard the words, and without moving cried angrily to the calendar, "Sit down and mind your own business. Did you not read the inscription over the door? Everybody is not obliged to live in the same way. Do not be so angry, my good man," replied the calendar. "We should be very sorry to displease you." So the quarrel was smoothed over, and supper began in good earnest. When the calendars had satisfied their hunger, they offered to play to their hostess if there were any instruments in the house. The ladies were delighted at the idea, and Sadie went to see what she could find, returning in a few moments laden with two different kinds of flutes and a tambourine. Each calendar took the one he preferred and began to play a well-known air, while the ladies sang the words of the song, and all rejoiced. I hope you are deeply relaxed, or even better, deeply asleep.